Okay, great. Here we go. First of all, I would like to thank Aarti Kasturirangan, and I like to call her Dr. Mommy Kasturirangan. She just recently had a baby about a month ago. And during this project, she was a PhD RA also. So, and during this time, she actually received her PhD. Dr. Rebecca Gordon, who is the director of the Office of Women's Affairs and also Campus Advocacy Network, and Dr. Paul Shuey, who's just a wonderful professor at the school of, at UIC in the psych department, and he also runs the Violence Prevention Center. So I don't have any disclosures, not at all. So basically, during my brief presentation, my quick 15 minutes of fame, I'm going to talk about the social norms, give you social norms background, past research, stats, talk about our pilot study, our social norms anti-violence survey, of course, the focus groups that we also had, and a social norms poster, messages, and, of course, our limitations. So just to give you a few key concepts and assumptions. So basically, with social norms, we look at individuals' perceptions of their peers' attitudes and behaviors. And just to give you an example of that, pluralistic ignorance. And basically what that is when an individual feels as if their beliefs are totally different from their peers, when the reality is they align. We also look at misperceptions, so overestimates of risky behaviors and underestimates of healthy or protective behaviors. And one assumption under the misperception is that people truly believe that these overestimates or underestimates are the true norm. And what individuals do is adjust their own behaviors to accommodate these misperceived norms. So either they rationalize rationalization of a problem behavior or an inhibition of a healthy behavior. So the purpose of social norms theory is basically to reduce or prevent risky behaviors, right? That's what most theories. And the way we do this is by identifying risky behaviors as normative deviant. And to give you an example of that with false consensus, so individuals who are currently participating in risky behaviors, they justify that by saying, oh, all of my peers are doing it. So a little different with the misperceptions, because that individual may not be participating in a risky behavior. But with false consensus, those individuals, they're like that small percentage who are actually participating in those behaviors. And basically what social norms does is try to correct those misperceptions by providing accurate normative information to the community. And we basically do that through social norms campaign. And of course, I'll get into that. So just to give you a little research, Haynes was one of the first people to conduct a social norms intervention. Berkowitz is, of course, just, you know, the guru with behavioral, in the behavioral science arena, and he does a ton of work with social norms and really focusing on alcoholism. Shuey, of course, I had to put him up there because he's just a genius because he worked on his project. And he also, he's done several projects dealing with sexual assault in males. The James Madison University and also Mary Washington College, they also did several studies, more specifically with males on sexual assault. Now, just to give you a little stats, now IPV is intimate partner violence, and on the CDC, that's how they kind of put the stats out there. So according to the CDC, nearly 5.3 million intimate partner violence incidents occur each year among women over the age of 18. And each year, nearly 1.5 million women and 800,000 men are sexually assaulted. So these are very, very scary stats. And more than 1 million women and over 300,000 men are stalked by an intimate partner, and about 2 million injuries and 1,300 deaths occur as a result of IPV. Now, according to the National Center for Victims of Crime, 60% of acquaintance rapes on college campuses occur in like casual relationships, casual dating relationships. 21% report violence by a current partner, and 32% of students report dating violence by a previous partner, which is definitely along the lines of the national rates of violence, which is about 30%. Now, to give you a little information about the pilot study, prior to conducting the school-wide survey, we focused on doing our pilot study, which was with incoming freshmen, incoming first-year students. And basically, the purpose of that was to look at the difference between their perceptions and actual behaviors, and to develop a questionnaire that we can refine for the school-wide survey. The surveys were administered, like I said, during freshman orientation. That was our convenience sample because we have a great relationship with our freshman orientation. We provided a lot of services with them. And in our pilot study, we had about 231 surveys completed with 104 males and 124 females. Now, I would love to read a few of the results from it. So we asked students, like, what percentage of males do you believe participate in a certain behavior? And we also asked about individual behaviors. So just to read a couple off to you, incoming college students at UIC believe that 40% of college students would hit, kick, or punch something like a wall or table when they are angry with a boyfriend or girlfriend. And when we asked about the individual behaviors of those students, 21% said they have hit, kicked, or punched something like a wall or table when they were angry. Just to give you another one, of those students, they believe that 35% of college men have previously gotten someone drunk in order to have sex with them. But then we asked about the individual behaviors, 6% actually reported participating in those types of behaviors. So, the purpose of our social norms anti-violence survey was just to administer a revised survey to a cross-section of all UIC students and to use those findings to develop a poster campaign where we're putting out positive messages and hopefully creating change. So, basically, our hypothesis, students will overestimate risky behaviors and underestimate protective behaviors of their peers, and we ask questions about sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, and bystander attitudes. And we compared their perceptions to their actual individual behaviors. So our questionnaire had the four sections, sexual assault, and some of those variables are sexual consent, physical and verbal pressure to have sex, and use of alcohol to use someone to get someone to have sex. Domestic violence variables were just characteristics of the power and control theory. So we looked at jealousy, physical violence, isolation, verbal and mental abuse, and also manipulation. Stalking variables. We looked at the effects after a breakup. Stalking tactics such as following an ex-partner, sending unwanted emails, and also contacting family and friends to try to get back with their ex. Bystander variables included intervening in violent situations, dealing with strangers, how do you stay safe in parties. So with our survey, the survey was conducted via SurveyMonkey, which is an online software that you can use. It's very secure. We had about over 2,400 surveys completed or started. We had to take out 605 due to incompleteness or duplications. So that left us with about 1,800 surveys that we could use. So the procedures that we went through was the IRB process, and I was very fortunate to head that on, you know, since I was a junior person on a project. They really, you know, said, go ahead, go for it. You know, this is your first time, and I guess I appreciate that. We recruited through the UIC Mass Mail and also other listservs. We relationships that we had with different professors, we would tell them about the survey, and they would make announcements in their classes. And we had incentives, which was also great, which we had 6 iPod shuffles that we gave away for persons who completed the actual survey. At the end, there was a separate window where they can leave their information, because, of course, the survey was anonymous. So some sample questions that we use. The first 3 is just an example of, you know, just asking of their actual perception. So what percentage of UIC men feel they need to trick a person into sleeping with them? And like the last one, have you ever pressured an ex into getting back with you? So I only have 5 minutes. I have to make this really quick. This right here just basically shows the comparison of the UIC student body to the our participants in our study. And I guess the main thing I would like to point out is the number of females that we had in our study, which is 73%, which is very, very, very large number. So the results. What we looked at... descriptive data, so the mean of all versus the mean of the men. And we pulled out, you know, the men specifically because some questions ask, what do you believe UIC men would do, you know, and along those lines. We also looked at the individuals, too, and then frequencies. And then also frequencies with, like, gender and age and all that great stuff. So just to give you, okay. The scale that we used was between 0 and 100%, and individuals, their responses were actually true or false or yes or no. We also used correlation matrix to examine relationships among variables, and I'll just pull out one that I thought was really, that was a good one. So basically, and this one is looking at grad versus undergrad, and it was a big difference with our graduate students and our undergrad students. And more specifically, I would say our graduate males. And this is a really good one. So this question asks, do you believe after a breakup, it's okay, you can do whatever it takes to get back with your ex? Graduate males said, 22% of them participated in that type of behavior, like they feel it's okay, compared to 8% undergrad males and 3% graduate females and 7% undergraduate females. So from this, we decided that we'll also do focus groups just to, you know, be able to collect qualitative data and also elaborate on survey questions. So we completed 7 groups, which 4 female, 3 male, and we... I listed some sample questions, and just to give you a few results from the actual focus group. So we asked people, how do you stay safe at parties? And for the most part, the males said they don't do anything to prepare for it, but once they're at a club or at a party setting, they look out for their friends, and more specifically female friends, because, you know, sometimes when it comes to the males dealing with their male friends, we ask questions like, if you've seen someone pushing drinks on them, or if they left with someone, the guys were saying, well, hey, I think they're lucky. Guys were like, oh, no, if my friend leaves with a girl, I'm thinking he's lucky. So it was those types of questions. The females, though, they were a little different. Like, they always had a game plan. Like, okay, we're going to stick together. We never leave without one another. So they said things like that. But when it came to asking questions about jealousy, both the male and females were pretty much along the same lines, that they felt like small amounts of jealousy in relationships is healthy and normal, but once it starts to be controlling, where you start to be manipulated or isolation or anything like that, then that's when it's a little too much. How we also asked about anger. And because with the hitting and kicking and punching, that was really scary, the results that we received. and most said that, of course, anger, you should never do that in relationships. However, they felt like sometimes people, you know, take it there to, you know, that's their natural reaction. Or at least they're not punching me or hitting me as good that, you know, they can hit the wall. Oh, my goodness. All right, so we had social normative messages, which basically address misperceptions of healthy behaviors, and social marketing messages, which try to correct unhealthy behaviors. So some of our marketing messages that we put together, like got respect, got friends, is some of the social normative messages that we have, and it's still abuse and let it go is basically the marketing messages that we put together. Now, to talk about the limitations, one huge limitation was, you know, since this was my first time, you know, sometimes your first experience is a little awkward, a little like, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. So I forgot. I don't know how I forgot to do this, but after almost a week, I added the stalking questions. And no one caught it. I put it out there. We had already completed maybe 1,200 surveys. Then I realized, like, oh, my gosh, we don't have our stalking questions. So the results that we received from the stalking questions, I really believe if we had more responses for it, those would also go up. Of course, overrepresentation of women, like I pointed out in a graph, and our recruitment. Since we only use listservs, it may not be representative of the entire campus, of course, and the small number in our focus groups. And, of course, generalizability with the ways that we recruited. And funding. Funding was a huge, huge, huge limitation. Actually, once we started this project, the campus advocacy, they had their grant. But toward the end, or actually maybe last summer, it was a question of them not being funded again, and they didn't get funded, and we weren't able to actually finish and complete the survey. The poster campaign. So that's unfortunate. Hopefully, if we get into a little more money, we'll be able to finish it soon. And I guess that's it. Thank you.